whole bay.
Oh, she's not on. Haley?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Haley.
Whole bay is here.
Okay, thank you. Nelson Lagoon.
Just me, Sam.
Thanks, Sam. Falls Pass. In Sandpoint, we have Beverly, Paul, Jordan from the city of Sandpoint, and myself. Acatan.
Yeah, it's just me.
Just you? Okay. In the Anchorage office.
Yes, Mayor Osterbeck. We have myself, Annie Bailey. We've got Charlotte. Laura, Ernie, Talia, and Glenora.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Hey, Warren made it to King Cove City or Borough Office.
Thank you, Warren. Okay, so.
And in Cove, it's Daly and Lori at the office.
Oh, welcome, Lori. Adoption of the agenda. Anybody have any changes or additions to the agenda?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I don't know if the motion was on the floor. I could make an amendment or however you wanted to do it. I wanted to add that discussion item under new business about fried seafood.
Oh, okay. So, okay, so I'll just entertain a motion then to bring the agenda to the floor. I need a motion and a second.
Okay, I move the agenda.
I need a second.
This is Chris. I'll second it.
Okay, thank you, Chris. So one item that we talked about during the workshop was under new business. It would be a third bullet. That's Trident Seafood's possible move.
Move to amend it, adding under new business a third item, the Trident move from Acatan, proposed Trident move from Acatan to Captain's Bay, the Harbor.
Okay. All righty. Any others?
Sorry, was that a motion? You're breaking up.
Well, the motion was to bring the agenda to the floor, and then Paul made an amendment of to add under new business, Trident's move to Captain's Bay. And I know there's one more, so I was just going to put both of them on here and do both the amendments at once before we vote on it.
Oh, okay.
So, Chris?
Yes, sir.
I know we talked about this during the workshop also, so resolution 22.
I just didn't know if we had to do it now or we had to wait until we brought it to the table, but we need to move to adopt resolution 2243. We need to amend it by substituting resolution 2243 to its revised version that we got today.
Mr. Mayor, I think we can amend that during the meeting. We don't have to add it.
No, I wasn't going to do a motion on that one.
Yeah.
Okay. So everybody knew. Because some of the people weren't here for the workshop. So if there's no objections to Paul's amendment under new business, so you'd have the amended version before you. If there's no objections, the amended agenda would stand. Hearing none. Do we have any public comments on any agenda items? Anybody feel like they'll have a conflict of interest for this meeting?
Mayor Osterbach, this is Chris. I just wanted to, I know that it's not directly going into my pocket, but for one of the donation proposals that was put in by me on behalf of the King Cole Fire Department. So I just wanted to bring that to everybody's attention.
Okay. Yeah, and this is forwarded by you each year for the firemen's barbecue, or what, I'm sorry, I might not have the name of it right, but I don't feel that this is a conflict of interest for you. Any others? Okay. We need a motion to bring the April 14th minutes to the floor.
Motion, Warren.
This is Josie. So moved.
Thank you, Warren. Second by Josie. I think it was Josie in there. Anybody have any corrections or additions to the minutes? Okay. Hearing none. If there's no objections, the minutes will stand as written. Okay, we need a motion and a second on the financial report.
This is Brenda, so moved.
Thank you, Brenda.
I'll second it, Chris.
Thank you, Chris. Now that we got it on the floor, Annie?
Yes, Mayor, I'm back in assembly. So before you March 2022 financials, I pointed out a few things during the work session. One is line item on page one, line item R01203, other revenue. Year to date, we have $362,000 in this line item, which far exceeds what we had originally budgeted. But this includes the payments from the Cole Bay Dock insurance payments that we received from AMLJIA. And this is where we put those funds. So that's why that number is so large. If you go to the raw fish tax number, which is R01218, we, as of this financial statement, we are well over what we anticipated in May of 2021, which is great news. So I wanted to just highlight that. If you go to page 2 of 19, under the under administration, under E01200000380 contract labor. That is also a large number that was brought up at the last assembly meeting. That includes the normal contracts we have, but it also includes a very large payment for West Marine to conduct the Cole Bay Dock project, which we then received payment for, which is in that other line item I just discussed. So those are just two big items to point out. Other than that, if there is any other questions, please let me know. Thank you.
Thank you, Annie. Questions? Paul?
Yeah, thanks. The last couple of meetings, there was talk of a move to that new software system like a cell. When will we see that in a financial statement?
That'll be quite a ways out. We're still working out on the contract right now, and then the conversion itself will take a while to convert all the software. And then once everything's done, training's happened, then we'll have it go live. So that's still quite a ways out. I don't have a definitive date at this point in time.
Like 10 years or 10 days, maybe a little more specific.
Not 10 years and not 10 days. I would imagine within the next year we'll have that up and running. Hopefully it'll be faster than that, but I don't know. We have not spoken yet to Cassell about timelines.
Okay. Other questions? Hearing none. Question on the motion?
Warren?
Yes.
Paul?
Yes.
Chris?
Yes.
Sophie?
Yes.
Brenda?
Yes.
Samantha?
Yes.
Bailey?
Daly?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. In your package, you have the investment report. Any questions for Annie on the investment report? Okay, thank you. We have nothing under consent agenda or public hearings. So our next agenda item is introduction ordinance of the operating and capital budget. So we need a motion and a second to bring it on the floor and schedule it for public hearing.
I'll make a motion, Josie.
Thank you, Josie. We need a second. It'll die.
Second is Brenda.
Thank you, Brenda. Have this on the floor, Annie?
Yes, Mayor Osterbeck and Assembly. Before you, Ordinance 2211 adopting the operating and capital budget for FY23. There's a lot of information that is included in here. You have the agenda statement, which is about 20-some pages long, the FY23 permanent fund earning proposed appropriations, community budget requests, Ordinance 2211, and then a spreadsheet outlining the budget in here as well. On that budget, at the very end, the increases are shown in green and the decreases are shown in red. How I'm going to go do this is first I am going to explain what went through the budget process and then the permanent fund earnings, the community budget request, and then the ordinance itself. So with that, the FY23 budget is introduced today, and then the second public reading and public hearing we would probably schedule for May 26th. Administration did conduct an in-depth review of the borough anticipated revenues and expenditures and is recommending a relatively conservative budget for FY23. With that, I did go through this in great detail at the work session, but I'll highlight a few things. One thing we first look at is the state of Alaska budget. We received Governor Dunleavy's budget on December 15th. He included 100% funding for school debt, bond debt reimbursement. He proposed appropriations for the Community Assistance Fund and continuing contributions to PERS and TERS. In March 2022, the House Finance Committee released their version of the FY23 budget. Items that directly impact the borough is $48 million for school bond debt reimbursement for FY22. So last year we only received a portion of that school bond debt. That would make us whole to 100%. $78 million for school bond debt reimbursement for FY23. Community assistance payments for FY22 to make up differences from last year's payments. And a full recapitalization of the community assistance for full payment in FY23. It also includes full funding for harbor bond debt reimbursement and then a few other items there. On May 10th, the Senate passed their version of the budget. All of the elements that are highlighted here were included. That included forward funding for K-12 education, reimbursement for school bond debt payments for FY17 through FY21. 100% reimbursement for FY22 and reimbursement 100% for FY23. It also did, I believe, include the debt reimbursement for the harbor bond debt reimbursement that we have. But they also approved a total permanent fund dividend of $5,500 versus the House amount of $2,550. If the larger amount is approved, and this is from Mark Hickey, the governor will most likely veto other pieces such as K-12 forward funding and who knows what else. We should know more by May 18th at the latest of what's occurring at that point. And then I believe the governor has a chance to veto the budget as well. So with that, there's plenty that can change between now and July 1, but based off conversations with Mark Hickey, with Neil Vendriason, and others, we have decided to suggest including 100% of the school bond debt reimbursement for FY23. That was in all three budgets, the governor, House, and Senate. 0% of the harbor bond debt reimbursement, although it was in the House and Senate budgets. Historically, Governor Dunleavy does veto that line item. And $315,000 for community assistance. If any of these items change after the approval of the budget, administration will present a budget amendment to the Assembly for consideration at that time. And if we do know more before May 26th, we'll let you know and we can make the adjustments then. Are there any questions on what's happening at the state level? Okay.
Well, a quick one, honey. Usually we have a report from Mark Hickey, but it's either too early or too late coming next week, or maybe he had one out a couple weeks ago. Anyway, he usually updates us, doesn't he, on status of how the budget's going, or what's his latest update anyway, I guess.
Yeah, he does. And so the latest is what I just told you about the Senate passing their budget on May 10th, and that projection that if that the dividend goes through at the $5,500, there'll be some vetoes. That's the latest that we have, and he anticipates that we'll have more information no later than May 18th. And I got that from him yesterday.
Okay, thank you.
And Annie, before you go on, just for those in the other communities, so we have Ray at McGlashan here and Austin Drew. They're listening in for the part of the budget, and possibly they could answer the question. Anyway.
Thank
go
you.
Ahead.
Okay, so another item we look at is fishery considerations. In FY22, administration and the Natural Resources Department estimated a total fish tax revenue of $2,950,000. This was largely because we were unsure what the impacts were going to be due to COVID-19 and lower quotas and harvest for most species. As of March 2022, our fish tax revenue is approximately $3.8 million, which well exceeds our May 2021 predictions. So that's good news for us. For FY23, Administration and Natural Resources Department recommends a conservative approach to projecting the FY23 borough raw fish tax revenue based on recent fishery trends, environmental uncertainty, and potential fishery management actions. Conversely, there is reason for optimism for the fishing industry as COVID-19 is getting under control and the U.S. economy is rebounding. Also, the Board of Fisheries did not make changes to Area M salmon management plans as proposed at the most recent meeting. Additionally, the big three processors are in real competition to buy, process, and sell seafood, potentially resulting in better prices and more fish. Therefore, we anticipate $3.5 million in fish tax revenue in FY23. After that, I'll go to the department budget, so I'm on page 4 of the agenda statement. All of the departments have reviewed their budgets and made adjustments to meet the anticipated needs for FY23, so I've met with every single department head to go over their budgets. Two items is, one, the salary for FY22. In this budget, we're proposing a 2% cost of living adjustment. The consumer price index for urban Alaska for the preceding fiscal year is 4.9%. There's a link there if you'd like to go see that. According to Section 4.3.1 of the Employee Handbook, the Borough Assembly may, at its discretion, authorize annual cost of living adjustments for regular employees in an amount not to exceed the Consumer Price Index for urban Alaska as computed for the preceding fiscal year. So that number is 4.9%. We are, in this budget, it reflects a 2% increase, which is about $18,000 over all the salaries. So if the Assembly would like to, they would need to make a motion to increase that COLA. I've got a few options outlined here with what would occur with a 2.5, a 3, a 3.5, a 4, and a 4.9% increase. The other item that was taken into consideration is fringe. This changed across the board. We just anticipated a 5% increase in fringe benefits in 2022, therefore a flat 5% increase for all fringe. benefits on all the salary line items has been added, and fringe includes Medicare, ESC, which is workers' comp, PERS, and medical insurance costs is included in fringe. Next is education. We did meet with the school district on in April and in May, or we corresponded with them in April and in May. I understand that there's representation from the school district in Sandpoint, but before we go to that, I can just kind of highlight what David Nilsen, their business manager, has provided us. There was a letter that was sent out to the assembly, and I'm going to just read this for the record, but it says, members of the assembly, Mr. Mayor and Madam Administrator, the students, teachers, and staff of the Aleutians East Borough School District greatly appreciate your unfailing and uninterrupted financial support to the school district. Your valued financial support over the years has aided the district to provide the resources and facilities to augment and improve the quality of education for its students and to further the educational goals of the school district. As the school district finalizes the process of developing a budget proposal for the 2022-23 school year, it is distressingly evident, given the information currently at hand, that the anticipated expenditures will exceed the estimated revenues. This is due mainly to the recent steep decline in student enrollment, coupled with a further projected decline in student enrollment for the next school year. While student enrollment within the district has been steadily trending downwards for many years, it has declined quite significantly over the past couple of years, which now has a much greater negative impact on the funding the district receives from the state, given how the state calculates and allocates funding to the district. This precipitous decrease in student enrollment results in a significant reduction in state funding for education. That being the reality, as well with all other years, the district endeavors to minimize costs where possible and operate as efficiently as possible. Notwithstanding, many expenses areas continue to trend upwards, like salaries, benefits, utilities, most notably fuel and electricity, as well as the cost of food. These expenses are generally non-discretionary, so there's a little to no opportunity to minimize these significant costs. For fiscal year 2023, in addition to the assumed customary AEB financial commitments of $800,000 for education, $35,000 for scholarships, and $20,000 for student travel, the school district is requesting a $300,000 supplemental financial commitment, which will allow the district to submit a balanced district budget to the state by the July 15, 2022 deadline. So that letter was from Dave Nielsen. If you also read in on page 4 of the agenda statement, there's discussions about the base student allocation amount, which hasn't changed since 2017. And then it goes on a little bit more about how the decline in students will impact the budget. So with that, I'd like to open it up to the school district. If you'd like to comment, that would be great. Thank you.
Or you open the floor, if I may. We apparently don't have a school superintendent to give a report, and we also aren't able to get a report from the school finance officer. Sometimes we've had that option.
Well, that was a report that she read.
And then in conjunction with the report she read, do we have a copy of that? I don't remember getting that letter. I wouldn't mind seeing it. So when she reads, it's hard to follow sometimes.
The letter was emailed.
Did I didn't remember seeing it.
Did you get any of my emails?
I get some of them, I guess. I don't know. I don't remember seeing that one. That's all.
It was emailed to everyone.
Okay.
Well, we can get you a copy of it.
Yeah, that would be great.
Okay, so does the school district have something? You could come up. You know where it's going to come up? There's a mic right here. Yeah, you can speak into that.
Hi, this is Oscar. If you guys just want to make sure you can hear me okay. Me and Ray McLaughlin are both here to represent the school board to discuss the request for the supplemental income. As a teacher and parent and someone who's worked closely on the district level as well with the school district, I do want to say that I believe that with the decrease in student count that we've had, and we don't know what the BSA is going to do, but if we cut $300,000, based upon what the budget was originally for the school district that found the cuts initially, it was a dramatic cut in teachers, aid support, and other critical things that really make the education here at our school possible. And I think that it would be very beneficial and wise of the borough to consider this increase in budgeting for at least this year to see what happens in the future. Traditionally, the borough has been very supportive of funding schools as long as possible to make sure that they have the opportunity to maybe increase student count. But I think that's going to be really difficult for us to attract talented teachers, families, or other people. And I think we would also start losing families that are still here who maybe would be concerned about the outcome of their students' education if they start seeing these services really decline based upon lack of teachers, lack of staffing, and other opportunities like sports even, things like that. So I think that this could have really kind of like a domino effect that would be hard to stop if we don't kind of maybe take it as a soft landing as opposed to a hard cut. And this $300,000 this year would allow the school district to continue offering some great support for our students, and as we see what happens to the BSA and student counts and things like that, we'll be able to navigate future budgets and see where it goes from there. So that's just what I wanted to share as a teacher and a parent, as well as someone who works on the district side on other things. But if there's any questions, Rhea and I, and Rhea, if you want to say something as well.
Hello, this is Rhea. Just on the school board level, sitting at the table trying to decide what area is best to make those budget cuts in is very difficult because we don't want to cut teachers and sports activities and the things that are really important for our students and our families. And so I would just encourage you to please consider, like you said, the domino effect of what could happen if that is what we end up having to do, because reality is if we can't have a balanced budget, then we're going to have to make cuts somewhere. And so we would prefer not to have to do that. And like you said, just to be able to navigate and find out what the budget's going to look like, since we don't have the answers right now, it just would be helpful to the district for the borough to be able to do that for us.
From the assembly, any questions?
Mayor Strack, this is Annie. Can I add something?
Go ahead.
So I just want to finalize that the proposed budget that is before the assembly does include an additional $300,000 in funding as requested by the school district. So the total funding with the local contribution of the $1,100,000, $35,000 for school scholarships and $20,000 in student travel totals $1,155,000, and that is proposed in this budget. Thank you.
Okay. Paul?
Yeah, I haven't seen the school board. I assume they passed the budget. Maybe some people can hear.
We have not adopted a budget yet. It's still on the table because of the discussions of where to make the cuts. David presented us with a few different options, but we still haven't come under agreement.
You're waiting for us.
Yes?
Go ahead.
So there was an initial budget that was read a first reading, I think, two meetings ago, and that one was presented by the business manager and superintendent, and it had dramatic cuts where we would have, I think, only one non-combined class in Sandpoint in the elementary wing, loss of at least one position on the high school side as well, and then cuts from several sports. And the board did ask that they come back with a different budget that didn't have as much loss of teachers. So, again, it would be like a K-1 combined, first, second combined, third, fourth, combined, and 6 would be by itself. So, yeah, K-1, 2, 3, and 4, 5, and 6 would be by itself. So every class would have one teacher teaching two grades.
And then also our special ed position in high school was on there, too. So I think it was a total of $250,000 where the initial cut total of $227,000. I'm not for sure on those numbers exactly. Don't quote me, but somewhere in there out of Sandpoint, and it was like $27,000 out of King Cove. And I think the large number out of Sandpoint was because we've just fallen under the 100 the 100 student threshold. So the cuts in the with the teachers, I think that's the biggest impact on our students.
And so then the meeting following that, they did offer a second budget or a different budget with a more robust staffing for that the board, I think, was interested in, but it was contingent upon the $300,000 from the borough. So there is a budget that's before the board, or the assembly at this time, school board. And so there is a component of this is why we're making the ask, this is why we're here kind of speaking to it, because we are asking for an opportunity to continue these services. I, as a teacher, I can tell you right now, as parents, like, I can tell you that it would be, I think, really, really detrimental for our students to have all these combined classes. It's hard enough with the students as spread out as they are in their abilities to offer different opportunities for different students based upon where they are, and so having adequate staffing for now would be very important.
Okay, thank you. Paul?
Short question is the school board scheduled to have a meeting to discuss the budget item anytime
soon?
Our
meeting is on May 24th. Your guess is the 26th, right? You have a meeting on the
26th.
So ours, we rescheduled for May 24th.
Oh, that would be good, I think.
Other questions for the school people? Paul.
Thank you. I have three comments just on this. While we're on the subject, might as well make some of my feelings on real short little comments. There are three items I have problems with. Of course, this what we're doing now is just the first reading of the budget, the final reading, and when we adopt the budget is a couple weeks. But there were three things that I have problems with. I'd like to see them addressed by when we have a new superintendent who was just hired, apparently, which is good, or temporary, or whatever he is. But the three items that bother me a little bit. I don't have direct involvement with the school, but I live in the community, like everybody does around here. So I'm kind of unhappy how the test score things are going, and I don't know what the answer is, but I'd like to see the school board administration address that and say what their plan is. And I know I believe the school district has 5 high-paid employees that live all over the country. And I would like to see those employees come back in the district and contribute to that's a lot of money. And I know there's a certain reason, but other people have come up to me, and that bothers other people, too. And then that's number two. And the last thing, I don't know if we can get some information. I know there's been some recent lawsuits with the school district, and I don't know if any of that's public information. If it is, it'd be nice to know how it affects our budget, which, you know, affects how much we get. Those three things. Thank you.
The last one again.
The lawsuits. Budget item on the lawsuits, yes.
Okay. Any other assembly members have comments?
Warren here.
Hey, Warren.
Yeah, I share that same concern that Paul had with the employees being scattered on all over the country. Okay.
Right. Others? Okay, just for the assembly knows when administration added the funding in that we did. I don't know the exact date, but just before Patrick left, we had a teleconference with Patrick and Dave, Annie and I, and talked about the school budget and where it was. And
basically, we were told that the board had two meetings, and the budget that they were using showed a need for the $300,000 added in over the top of the $800,000. We were assured that the school board and the administration were all on board so far on their request. So knowing that, and I asked multiple times to be sure, I felt that probably this year would be a good year to go ahead and put that additional funding in to make them as near as whole as we could get, not knowing, you know, and every year we never know what the state is doing with their budget, and this year is no different. With the budget, it looks like came out of the Senate. I think they're so far over that somebody's going to take a blade to parts of this budget. And what I've seen in the past normally is schools and harbors are usually the first ones that get cut or take quite a cut. So I'm comfortable with the request. And, of course, it's up to the assembly to make the final decision on it. But another thing is one of the, when we formed the borough, we took over the schools from the communities, which was godsend for the communities because it was taking up every bit of revenue that the cities had to do their part with the state. So with that, I still stand by that, you know, the borough has two number ones. One of the number ones is making sure that schools are funded properly so that kids get a good education and that the buildings and everything are kept up. And the other part of my number one is fisheries, because without the fisheries, we can't fund the rest of it. So I always stand behind education first. So anyway, if there's no other comments from the assembly, Annie, I guess you can move on.
Mr. Mayor, this is Chris.
Hi, Chris.
Yeah, I just want to say that, you know, I certainly support the school and what they have brought to the table, and I think that I kind of echo with Warren and Paul, too. I think that if they can do some homework, too, and look for some of these positions where we're funding people living in other states or other communities far away, I know that we can get people hired more locally, and so I feel the same way about these people that were paying pretty big bucks, and they're not even in the state anymore. So that's all I got.
Thank you for that. Others? Okay. Forward.
All right, Mayor Ostrack and Assembly, I'm on page 5 of the agenda statement. We're going to move on to Fund 20. Fund 20 is reflected differently in the FY23 budget in the ordinance. In the borough financials, Fund 20 outlines a number of things. It outlines grants from outside entities, from the state of Alaska, NOAA, Rasmussen, et cetera. It shows capital projects funded from grant and borough sources. So, for instance, we have a Trident contribution to the Actan Airport. The hovercraft sales proceeds designations are in Fund 20. And then the borough permanent fund earnings are appropriated in here as well, which we have done over the past couple years. In FY23, the ordinance includes, or in this budget, the ordinance includes the designation of the permanent fund balance and shows the unspent appropriated funds for FY17 to FY22, approved expenditures through April 30th, 2022, and this value will change between April 30 and June 30 at the end of the fiscal year. It also shows the appropriated permanent fund earnings for FY23 and the appropriated transfer to the general fund to cover the FY23 budget. This has not been done in the past, and an outline of why this has occurred is below. So when the assembly votes to utilize permanent fund monies for specific projects, that is a designation a part of the permanent fund. Sometimes the borough doesn't want to spend all the monies that were designated in one fiscal year. In fact, sometimes that's the intent, to designate a part of the permanent fund monies for long-term or future projects. Therefore, when the borough doesn't spend all the designated amounts in one year, the borough still has to show the intent of the assembly to spend those permanent fund monies on those specified projects. The correct way to do this is through a designation of permanent fund balance, as shown in the new addition to the budget ordinance this year. By designating the funds in the fund balance, they are now spoken for and cannot be spent on something else or utilized any differently unless by action of the assembly. The ordinance appropriates the transfer of $939,000 to the general fund to cover the FY23 general budget deficit, which I'll go over in a moment, and $874,000 for FY23 designated projects. A resolution will be presented at the May 26, 2022 assembly meeting approving the FY23 permanent fund earnings to designated projects. And then also we have a permanent fund policy in place right now that will be revised, where we'll actually leave the permanent fund earnings cash in the permanent fund investments in order to keep earning a good return for the borough, but having the money clearly shown as designated funds in the ordinance and in the financial statement on the balance sheet. Currently what we're doing is when those monies are designated, I pull them, they're pulled out and they're put into the AMLIF account, and we keep track of them there, but we will be keeping them in the permanent fund because we'll make more money based off of interest. So that's a change and something we have not done before. So if there are any questions on that, please let me know, but that is reflected on the second to last page of the ordinance. So overall, just a quick summary of the proposed FY23 budget, we have expected revenues, and I'm rounding here, for FY23 revenues of $6,765,000. We have expected expenditures for Fund 01, which is the general fund, Fund 30 and 41, of $6,985,000. Which is about a net revenue over expenditures of $220,000. So we're spending more than what we're making. If you go to page 7, we have a transfer out to helicopter operations of $747,000. We have a transfer in from the terminal operation of $28,500. That means we're making some money off of the terminal. And then a transfer in from the permanent fund, which is what I discussed earlier, of $939,000. Which makes us whole. And that $939,000, we're proposing taking that out of the FY23 permanent fund earnings, so we have a balanced budget. This budget does assume 100% in school bond debt reimbursement, 0% for harbor bond debt reimbursement, a 2% cost of living increase for the employees, and funding education at $1,155,000. Are there any questions? Hey,
Gary. Word here.
on our 2% cost of living, when could we make a motion to bump that up a little bit?
You can do that now. You can do that. So when after I'm done presenting, you could do that, or we could have a conversation about that now.
Okay, we'll just wait until you're done.
Okay. So if you go to page 8 of the agenda statement, I've broken out this in tables. There's probably more information than you need, but I wanted to make sure you had all the information so you could ask questions. On page 8, it shows a table of all the expected projected revenues for FY23 and the changes that we've made, and off to the right are comments of what's included in that revenue. So if there's any questions on this, please let me know, but it does show a decrease in interest income. Typically, we want to budget a little smaller amount for that than what we were because of the market volatility. We just can't predict what we're going to bring in, so I've reduced that. Raw fish tax does increase to the 3.5. Other revenue stays the same. Shared fish tax, we did increase that from our estimate in FY22. In FY22, we thought with the impacts of COVID that number might go down, so we just increased that back up to what I believe we'll get this next year. And then there's the shared fish tax, FMA and FMA 3. Harbor bond debt on page 9 is at zero. School bond debt is at 100%, which is about $626,000. Community assistance is at $315,000. Payment in lieu of taxes, that is the from the federal government. That is based off the five-year average, so I am anticipating we'll get $615,000 this year. But we don't know what we get every year until June, so it's hard to guess, but I'm guessing that we'll get $615,000. And then the U.S. Fish and Wildlife lands at $15,000, and those are the Refuge Revenue Sharing Act funds where the we receive annual payments to from U.S. Fish and Wildlife. So that comes in at the revenues of $6.7 million, about. Then on page 10, there's some assumptions. And then if you go to page 11, this outlines all the changes that are reflected in the large Excel spreadsheet at the back, breaking out each department. So you can see in green, once again, that shows increases. The red shows decreases. And one item that was brought up at the work session is the lobbying federal and lobbying state. It just swaps them in our current financials. They're backwards, so we're correcting that. The lobbying fees are at $75,600, and the state lobbying fees are at $45,000. So we've swapped those two items so they reflect the correct line item in the budget. You go to the assembly, there's one big increase that's for travel. That is at $25,000. At one point, we were talking about per diem increases, which we haven't decided on yet, but that would cover that if that occurs, and it also will cover more travel, which the assembly has voiced through the strategic planning cycle and at other times that they'd like to do that. So that increases that line item. If you go to administration, there's some changes that reflect salary changes with the 2% and also to reflect what everyone's currently making. And then if you go to the assistant administrator, there's minor changes there. I think if the next one, if we go to, is on page 14 under the finance department. There was a two items added to this. One was for the contracts. That's $100,000, which is for the contract accountant who assists in audit prep. They'll help with the financial software changeover and complying with the necessary and required internal controls. That's before you as a resolution to approve the engagement letter for FY23. But that's been added, and just to highlight that in the past we have had somebody assist with the audit. They just didn't have a contract line item. It was charged somewhere else. So we do need assistance with those services for audit prep. And then there's the software line item of $15,000. That's the annual cost for the new financial software. It's probably a little bit less than that, but $15,000 in there to have just a little buffer if it's needed. Natural resources, we added $20,000 to the contract line item. It is a Board of Fish year, so that will help us with Board of Fish prep. And then I think those are the only real major changes in the department itself. Are there any questions before I move on?
Go ahead, Paul.
Under lobbying, I'm just only guessing. But I'm going to guess that there was going to be a need for quite a bit more money to figure out if we have any options as far as when we got to do it soon, I believe. When some of our industry leaves town, if we have any options, I don't know how that, for instance, American Fisheries Act allocated a lot of fish around the some plants and communities. I don't know how the wording, I tried to do a little checking, but I don't know how that affects the question if we have options. But and because we have excellent lobbyists in D.C., however, there's conflicts with the position. So we have to figure that out, too. But while you were talking about that, I just wanted to mention, I don't have a suggestion of any budget change, but I'm guessing down the road pretty soon we're going to have to figure it out.
Oh, it'll be sooner, hopefully, than later, as we got this, I came up today and we gave to all of you, Danny and I have some meetings.
Okay, so I'm still on page 16. Just to go over, there's a KCAP, and we made some adjustments there to reflect current costs for that project, so there's been some decreases. And then on page 17, there's the local contribution that reflects a $300,000 increase for education. And then under other, there's some changes. One of them is a Lucia crab that does go away in its entirety. Lucia no longer has the crab quota, so that line item is no longer needed. Insurance, I might need to go a little bit higher after listening to AMLJA. I think property insurance will increase drastically this year, but I haven't received the quote yet, so I'm going to stick with the 220. I'm reading too many numbers. I'm sorry. I'm going to stick with that number proposed here for right now. But overall, that's for Fund 01. If you go to page 19, this reflects Fund 23, which is basically enterprise funds for the Cold Bay Terminal. The revenue I don't anticipate changing at this moment. We've not entered into a contract with Aleutian Airways at this point in time. But even if we did, I think the amounts would have to change and we wouldn't have much of an increase there. And then there's been some changes on the expenditures based off of now that we have a year under our belt of operations, we've got a better grasp of what we need there. But overall, there's still basically we would be making money off of the terminal.
Annie, I got a question on the Cold Bay Terminal.
Yes.
Under utilities, I see it says gas, and then it says fuel. Can you explain that a little bit? What's the gas for? I think the fuel is for running, I'm sure, the boilers and all that stuff, but the gas, what is that for?
I really honestly wish I had an answer for you right now, Chris, but I'll have to get back to you. It's used, it's charged in the budget, but I don't exactly know what it's for. I'll get back to you.
Well, could it be for the vehicle we have over there?
That could be it. Yeah. I'll have to get back to you.
Yeah, no, I just was curious. I just was kind of wondering why it just doesn't go under one line item, but I understand if it's being used for a vehicle, yeah, it's got to be done differently. So, okay, thanks.
Mm-hmm. All right, so page 20 is the enterprise fund for helicopter operations. Our revenues do not change. They are staying the same based off the essential air service contract we have with USDOT and Maritime. But the operations do change slightly. Once again, we're getting every year a better grasp of what this is costing us, so there's been some decreases and off of usage and stuff. And then the contract line item did go up a little bit based off of our contract agreement that we have for the Essential Air Service there. But essentially, there is about a $747,000 deficit, so we have to cover that. On page 21, it goes into Fund 23. This is the bond fund expenditures. At the work session, I was asked to get some more bond information out. I'll have to send that separately. That takes a little bit more time than I had, and I want to accurately get the information to you. But in FY23, the bond interest payment based off of our audit will be $646,000, and the bond principal is $1,830,000. Resulting in total expenditures of $2,476,000 for FY23. So that's actually in Fund 30. That's Fund 30. Fund 41 is our maintenance reserve fund expenditures. That is at $100,000. I had it at $110,000 at one point. However, per our code, it says specifically that the maintenance reserve shall be $100,000, so we put that at $100,000. So that's for maintenance reserve, and that's reflected in Fund 41. So those are the three expenditure line items. If you look at the big spreadsheet, those are the three expenditure line items that we reflect in the $6,985,000. And then lastly, and I can go over this real quick, is on page 22. It's just the FY23 permanent fund earning appropriations overview. This is something that will come back before you at the May 26th. Sixth meeting via resolution, but just to give an overview of what we're presenting, and there's also the next page after the agenda statement that shows a table of the potential appropriations. There's $1,814,000 in permanent fund earnings for FY23. This is 4% of the permanent fund distribution amount, and is based off APCM reading of the borough ordinance, and it's off the five-year average market value. Ordinance 2211 would approve $939,000 of this to be transferred to the general fund to cover the anticipated FY23 budget deficit. That's what's going to make us whole for the year. And then the remaining $874,000 in these earnings will be presented to the Assembly, like I said, at the May 26th meeting, and it'll help determine where the rest of these remaining funds get appropriated. And currently, we assess our strategic plan, existing projects and needs, and what we're currently working on, and what the Assembly is, or what the administration is currently proposing, is $150,000 for fisheries research, $50,000 for the King Cove Road heavy equipment, and that value may change because for that grader that got damaged, we may be able to settle that with the claim, and I'm working on that now. So that value might change between now and the next Assembly meeting. $200,000 for the Sandpoint and Accutane Harbor floats, $250,000 for deferred maintenance, $50,000 for community travel, and the remainder would go into the project contingency. And then finally, we would reappropriate some of the prior fiscal year permanent fund appropriations with taking the AB property surveys funds and reappropriate those to the project contingency. That project has been completed. It's a great job by Ernie on that. That basically has been 5 years of work, and that's finally done. So we'd like to reappropriate and close that project out. And then the Cold Bay School, now that that's been sold, we'd like to move those funds to the project contingency line item as well. And the value reflected in here has since changed since I wrote this, but not by much, and I'll have that presented at the next meeting. So with that, if there's any questions, please let me know. Thank you.
Thank you, Annie. Questions from the Assembly?
Mr. Mayor, this is Chris.
Go ahead, Chris.
I just wanted to go on record that what we had talked about in the workshop to see if possibly that Akoon fuel truck replacement may be something that may be purchased with that money that Trident gave for the airport improvements. I think it was $657,000. I know Annie was going to kind of research that, but I just wanted to bring that back to the Assembly's attention.
Thank you for that. Paul?
Yeah, I agree with Chris on that. I looked at the ad for the one we're putting out to bid, and yeah, it's going to save us money, I think. There might be another reason it's needed, but it's going to be a big difference what we get on the bid as opposed to what is being spent on a new fuel truck.
Do you realize the money he's talking about, the buying one, is for Akoon?
Yes.
So you're talking about transferring the one in Akutan to Akoon?
Pretty close, aren't they?
Yeah, they're close, but the reason we're replacing it is because there's problems with it.
Well, it wasn't stated in the reason you're replacing it. I didn't catch why exactly it was being replaced, but it doesn't have any miles. Can't be too many problems. There's like 3,000 miles on it. Anyway, thank you.
Okay. Others? Okay.
Warren here.
Hey, Warren.
See, I'd like to go ahead and propose an amendment to the budget for the cost of living to be doubled to 2% to 4%, if I could get a second.
Okay, so Warren's making an amendment to increase the cost of living to 4%, and we need a second.
I'll second it. This is Chris.
Thanks, Chris.
Mr. Chief, did we make a motion? Ordinance on the floor?
Yeah.
Oh,
it was made by Josie and seconded by Brenda. Okay. Did you have a question on the motion?
No, I just wasn't sure if we skipped that step or not.
No.
Let's see, all those numbers have put me to sleep. But.
So, any discussion on the amendment?
Warren again?
Red Warren.
See, the reason I do this is because I know that the inflation rate is going up by something around, now it's up in like 11% to 18%. To see 2% there, that was like a pretty low number to me, but I know that Annie's being conservative and in the... Oh, people who live out in the bush and in Alaska, even in urban areas, life can be pretty rough. So that's the reason for that. Any other discussion?
Okay. Other comments?
This is Brenda. I've been following what the raises are in different areas around the state and also looking at the rate of inflation. It is getting incredible. And I don't know how people are going to start surviving in some areas. And I really think it's important to recognize our people. They're doing a lot of work for us. With really, in reality, we have a small crew. And I think they need to be able to be recognized for the value that they are also. But, you know, that also depends on Annie if that can be fit into the budget.
Mr. Mayor, Chris here. Yeah, I support that, raising that to 4%. You know, we're constantly seeing fuel prices going up and food prices going up, and I don't think the interest rate for inflation is going to go down anytime soon. And I think, you know, to keep the good core of workers that we have, we need to try to take care of them as best as possible. So if Annie can figure that out, I certainly would like to look into that too. So thank you.
Numbers in.
Okay. Other comments? Okay. Question on the amendment?
Paul? Yes.
Chris?
Yes.
Brenda?
Yes.
Josie?
Yes.
Warren?
Yes.
Samantha?
Yes.
Haley?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. So now we have the amended motion.
Why don't you finish your statement?
Oh, I was going to say we have the amended motion before us.
Hey, Mr. Mayor, I have some problems with some of the budget items, but because this is the first reading and there probably get me some changes, I would hope that there might be some additional amendments that are next before we pass it in 2 weeks. But the one big problem I have is the organization of the finance department. And, of course, it's coming up in a resolution, so I'll have a chance to talk about it. And the school district's up in the air right now about how that's coming. We can amend that, of course, before we pass it. Whatever the rest of the assembly would like to do, and there may be a couple other things, but I just wanted to get the comment about a couple things out.
Okay.
First reading. Thank you.
Others? Okay. So we have the amended ordinance 2211 before us, and this vote would be to bring it back for a public hearing on May 26th. So with that, call a question.
Warren?
Yes.
Warren? Josie?
Yes.
Paul?
Yes.
Brenda?
Yes.
Please.
Yes.
Haley.
Yes.
Samantha.
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Moving on, so we need a motion and a second to bring Resolution 2240 to the floor.
This is Chris. I make a motion that we bring Resolution 2240 to the table.
This is Brenda. I'll second.
Thank you, Brenda. Annie?
Yes, Mayor Osterbeck. Resolution 2240 is for supporting a proposal for the PSMFC COD disaster mitigation RFP to fund the continuation of the COD tagging project. I'm going to defer to Charlotte to explain this. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Mayor Osterbeck and Assembly. Before you is Resolution 2240. I'm just going to go ahead and read the agenda statement. I think that might be easiest. So as you all know, Pacific cod fisheries are critically important to the borough communities, to the borough itself, serving as a primary source of local employment and obviously make up a large portion of our fish tax revenue. You're all familiar, in 2018, the Goa Pacific cod fishery was declared a fishery resource disaster by the Department of Commerce. As a result, the Pacific States Marine Fisheries Commission, who I'll probably just refer to as PAC States, has issued $5.9 million in research funds under the RFP, research to assess Gulf of Alaska Pacific cod stock conditions in response to warm water and other variable ocean conditions. As part of the AEB strategic plan, since 2020, the borough has been collaborating with the Alaska Fisheries Science Center to investigate cod population dynamics and migratory pathways in the western Gulf of Alaska. Our preliminary results indicate there is exchange of fish between the western Gulf and the Bering Sea, as many have suspected. This will have major implications for the management of these stocks, as well as the fishermen and communities that depend on PCOD. We're still analyzing the results to understand the proportion, timing, and pathways of migratory Pacific cod, and additional funding is needed to continue our research and to begin incorporating these results into a management context. The Alaska Fisheries Science Center, because these are NOAA funds, they cannot directly receive any money from this RFP. Therefore, we've decided it would be appropriate for the borough to submit a proposal as the applicant, and I would be serving as the lead PI for this RFP proposal. The project team would be exactly the same as who we've been working with. It includes research biologist Suzanne McDermott of AFSC and Pacific Cod stock assessment authors, both Steve Barbeau and Pete Holson, who is the new author in the Gulf of Alaska, as well as Dr. Julie Nielsen and Kim Rand, and Dr. Andrew Seitz of the University of Alaska Fairbanks. So this final budget is still being developed. It's designed to be scalable, but we've been given guidance from the stock assessment authors who worked closely with PAC States to develop this RFP to really ask for what we need to make this project work and to be thorough. So the final budget we we're still kind of hashing it out, but we have a pretty good budget, and it's actually much closer to 1.5 to 2 million. It would be lasting for a 3-year period, with the project period beginning this August, August 2022. So this budget does not include any in-kind or match from the borough, and would probably just include the de minimis overhead rate of 10% to cover the cost of grant administration in-house. So essentially subsidizing either somebody in-house to help administer this grant or potentially hiring someone who is not me. Additionally, since writing this, we have decided as a project team, because this is such a large, complex project, it is appropriate for me being the lead PI to incorporate a portion of my salary into this proposal, which would then subsidize, of course, a portion of my salary for the next 3 years to work on this project. The pre-proposal is due tomorrow, but full proposals are not due until June 24th. As such, the Natural Resource Department recommends approval of Resolution 2240, supporting us to submit a full proposal in collaboration with the Alaska Fisheries Science Center to the PAC States RFP to continue this cod tagging project, and I'm happy to take any questions.
I have one. So, you know, I hear good things about this and your involvement in it from everyone, and I think the fishermen really appreciate this also. But my question is, this is a $1.5 to $2 million project over the next 3 years. So are you committing to the borough for the next 3 years?
I wondered if somebody would ask me that. I guess so. So you got me. I'm on the hook.
Okay. Questions from the assembly. Paul.
Yeah, Charlotte, you mentioned there's no direct payment from the borough funds. However, because you're doing some of the work, your salary will be used as a borough contribution. Like, it's pretty common, I guess, to use that. And that's just for, or is there an anticipation of borough funds in the second year or third year, or what's the total, besides your salary contribution, what is a borough, besides the authorization on the signature page, what do we contribute besides that, I guess, just to be clear, just to be on the record?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for your question. So to clarify, just so it's really clear, I would be asking to cover a portion of my salary for the next 3 years. So we're not going to be contributing it in kind. They would be supporting my portion of the salary, which would strictly be to assist with the analysis and publication and things like that. Otherwise, all of the other costs for this project, besides overhead, which we would ask the standard 10% de minimis rate, which would go to somebody either in-house or hiring somebody to administer this grant so that it doesn't create an additional burden on somebody in the borough to do this. Other than that, all of the other costs are going to be paid for through this grant, so the borough is not going to be paying any direct costs, if that answers your question.
Thank you. Because, well, of course, everyone knows the reason I'm asking the question is because we might be forced to contribute a little money after our spring Board of Fish meeting. There's some research that may be needed and genetic stuff, tagging stuff, and so that in the future, if we have to contribute in the short future, that might be the direction we're going to need more focus, I guess. But for this project, I was hoping there'd be more tags. I read the number of tags. I kept hoping there'd be more tags to learn more information, but thank you. That's all.
Okay.
Yeah. If I may, Mr. Mayor, can I just make a quick clarification?
Sure.
So previously, you know, the borough has in-kind supported this cod tagging project through the fisheries research line item. Through Fund 20, and so with this grant, that would actually free up that line item to contribute to other potential research projects that come up, and salmon has been kind of brought up. We don't have anything clear quite yet, but we have been in discussions with Fish and Game and with fishermen about potential collaborative research projects for salmon. So that's kind of the whole goal of this grant would actually be to pretty much pay, it would pay itself. It would pay for itself to finish this project instead of asking for any more borough resources beyond my salary, which would be covered. So I hope that clarifies things. Thanks.
So Charlotte, so the grant is also going to pay a portion of your salary?
Yes, that is correct. It would pay a portion of my salary, probably 30% each year for the next 3 years, plus the salary of somebody in-house at the borough to help me administer this grant. And I haven't actually put out the pre-proposal yet for anybody to see, but we are looking at 173 satellite tags plus probably 6,000 conventional tags. So, it's a lot of tags.
Okay. Thank you. Other questions for Charlotte? Okay. So, we have resolution 2240 before us. Call a question.
Brenda?
Yes.
Paul?
Yes.
Warren?
Yes.
Josie?
Yes.
Chris?
Yes.
Haley?
Yes.
Samantha?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. So, before us we have resolution 2241. We need a motion and a second to bring it to the floor.
This is Josie. I'll make a motion.
Thank you, Josie.
This is Brenda. I'll second.
Thank you, Brenda. Danny?
Yes, Mayor Osterbeck and Assembly, before you use Resolution 2241, unauthorizing the use of the Colbay Clinic Fund funds and line items E-20-520-000-850 and E-20-510-207-850, and to terminate the Memorandum of Understanding with Eastern Aleutian Tribes for the Colbay Clinic. As you guys know, the borough has been working on constructing a new facility. In August, we received letters from the city and EAT that they were no longer interested in that, instead would rather renovate the existing clinic. So at that point in time, we terminated the agreement, and now we have quite a few funds that were appropriated towards this project that we would like to unauthorize and reappropriate. So over time, the borough obtained of $4,962,000. There's a breakout of what those were. There's $500,000 from an FY15 AED grant, a borough grant, $250,000 from EAT per that MOU, $800,000 for borough AMLIP contributions, and $3,412,000 from the permanent fund earning contributions. As of March 2022, in the financials, the borough has $4,529,000 remaining for the Colbay Clinic. I did go ahead and summarize the funding availability and recommendations, and one reason we're doing this is we're trying to clean up the financials for FY23, which is one of the reasons we're doing this. But the E-20-520-000-850 and Colbay Clinic funding reflected in the financials is the $500,000 in FY15 AEB grant. $132,000 of this has been expended, leaving about a balance of $367,000. These are not permanent fund earnings. They were borough general fund appropriations that are located in the borough's general fund, so essentially in the borough's checking account. Administration does recommend unauthorizing these funds, and then they'll be removed from the financials and no further action would be required. So those monies would just stay in the general fund for use for a different purpose. The other one is the Colbay Clinic EAT contributions. That was $250,000, was committed by EAT for capital construction in October of 2017. An agreement was signed with EATS for these funds, which is attached to this. None of the funds have been expended on this account. We're recommending terminating the agreement with EATS for the unspent funds, and then that would be removed from the borough financials and no further action would be required. The third portion of the money is the $800,000 from the AMLIP contribution. The borough assembly approved these funds via Resolution 20-12, authorizing an appropriation of $800,000 from the borough's AMLIP account for the Cold Bay Clinic. These funds are not permanent fund earnings, earned still in the borough's AMLIP account. Funds have not been expended out of this account, and these funds are no longer needed. So administration is recommending unauthorizing these funds, and it would be removed from the financials, and no further action would be required. The last portion is funds from the permanent fund earning. There's a breakout of the fiscal year allocations there for you and what's been reallocated to date. At this point, I'm not prepared to recommend any reappropriations. I'd like to do that at a later date, but there are a few options here to consider that will be brought before the assembly in the near future. So this resolution would unauthorize the funds as outlined in here, and it would help us clean up the financials, if you would, for FY 2023. Kind of confusing, okay. I'm sorry, but if there's any questions, please let me know.
Thank you, Annie. Questions? Paul?
Is it unauthorized, is it de-unauthorized, or is it defund? That word, I've never kind of used that word before. Is that the right word, I guess? Must be.
I think so, yes. It's just for unauthorizing the other one.
I did have a specific question about each commitment. They were going to spend some money at the clinic after we withdrew all that work we did to build a new clinic, and I don't know if they spent a dime yet, have they?
No, and that's got some developments I can talk to you about later. They are planning on doing some renovations. I guess I could talk about it now. And they have not done those yet. There's some permitting items that they have to do since it's on state-owned aviation lease land. However, the borough did receive a $2 million earmark from the Senate or from the Alaska delegation, I guess, at the federal level, for the Cold Bay Clinic. This money still wasn't enough to push it to build a new facility. We've talked to our federal lobbyists. We can't give it back, so instead what the Senate Murkowski has decided is we can use that to help renovate the current clinic, and so that would be used to, like, purchase a new generator, replace the boiler, help with the roof, and stuff like that. So we have to have a HRSA grant submitted by June 6th is what we were told by our federal lobbyists, so we've got to work on that over the next couple weeks to meet that deadline, so that those funds will probably be used to renovate the Cold Bay Clinic. And I was gonna do that in my report, but it seems like an appropriate time to explain that.
Okay. Other comments?
This is Daly. I have a question for Annie on this. Mayor. Okay, so with that money from the Senate, so who is going to be able to weigh in on what, you know, what we want done with the clinic? Who's going to be able to, you know, to say what we need or what we want?
Well, we've had an
input to the clinic or whatever.
Right. Thank you for that question. So, we've had preliminary discussions with Eastern Aleutian tribes to make sure that we could possibly spend the $2 million, which I think we can. But, yeah, the building is owned by the city, so we'll have to have conversations with the city and Eastern Aleutian tribes. But there are some pretty big needs, like the roof and generator and boiler, that would probably need to be replaced. But we'll have conversations with all the stakeholders.
Okay, great. Yes, that sounds real good.
Other comments?
question on the motion?
Chris?
Yes.
Warren? Warren?
Yes.
Josie? Josie? Paul?
Yes.
Brenda?
Yes.
Josie?
Yes.
Haley?
Yes.
Samantha?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. So we need a motion and a second to bring Resolution 2242 to the floor.
This is Brenda. So moved.
Thank you, Brenda.
I'll second this, Josie.
Thank you, Josie. Annie?
Yes, Mayor Osterbeck and Assembly. Before you, is Resolution 2242 authorizing the mayor to execute a borough FY22 community grant agreement with the City of False Pass in an amount not to exceed $62,500 for a False Pass Harbor electric upgrade. The borough has a budget request process that allows governing bodies in the borough communities an opportunity to request financial assistance from the borough for community projects. The borough did receive $560,000 worth of requests from the communities of Accutan, False Pass, King Cove, and Sandpoint. Those are actually in the packet in the budget section if you want to look at all those requests. During the FY2023 budget preparation process, it was identified that the borough had a deficit and other borough needs must be met. Therefore, administration did not recommend using FY23 permanent fund earnings at this time to fund the FY2023 request. If there is an excess of funds at the end of the fiscal year, distribution to the communities may occur via resolution at that time. Administration does recommend approving the City of False Pass's request for the False Pass Harbor electric upgrades in the amount of $62,500. In FY19, the Assembly appropriated $100,000 in permanent fund earnings for the False Pass Harbor. As of April 30th, 2022, only $364 has been spent, leaving a remaining balance of $99,636. Administration does recommend entering into a grant agreement with the City of False Pass in the amount of the $62,500 for the Harbor Electric upgrade and paying for it out of this False Pass Harbor line item. With that, if there's any questions, please let me know. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions?
Yeah, I got a question, Warren, here.
Oh, hold on a minute, Warren. Paul's
there. I don't know any problem. Asking this, but is this project on a list of projects that our consultant prepares for? Was it on there or not?
This was passed back in 2019 by the borough, and it was their Harbor House agreement. I don't remember if it was on our strategic plan or not, Annie.
I think at one point False Pass Harbor was. I don't think it is now, currently. And then the False Pass Harbor House actually has its own line item, and that was to help with the design of that facility. And there's only about $5,000 left in that, which I'm assuming that the city can use for that project still. So this isn't on our strategic plan now, but we do have the funds available, and the borough does own the harbor and city operates it, so it seems like a good use of those funds. Thank you.
Okay. Other comments?
Yeah, Warren here. See, was this an extension of the electrical system that they have at the harbor now, or is it repairing the system that's already there?
So, Mayor Osterbeck, according to their detailed job description, they're having a company come in and work on performing the load calculations and assigning the appropriate replacement feeder and circuit breakers with the correct amperages. Some of the other ones are being downsized, so they're, I think they're trying to just adjust it to meet the needs of the harbor.
So basically it's an upgrade.
Okay, so that just, yeah, that'll be an upgrade. Okay, thank you.
Okay, other questions? Hearing
none. Hey, Austin Back, this is Daly here in Kobe. I have a question. So were these, when, I mean, was all the borough places, were we all, like, to put in, you know, for these different projects, you know, with Kobe or Nelson Lagoon or any, or were we in, you know, included in this?
Yes. Go ahead, Alan.
Yeah, all of the communities in the borough, annually we've been doing this for, if I can remember.
Okay. Just asking, thanks.
Okay. Other questions or comments? Hearing none. Question on the motion?
Brenda?
Yes.
Please?
Yes.
Josie?
Yes.
Paul?
Yes.
Warren?
Yes.
Samantha? Samantha?
Yes.
Haley?
Okay, our last one, Resolution 2243, we need a motion and a second to bring it on the floor.
This is Brenda, so moved.
Thank you, Brenda.
This is Josie, I'll second.
Thank you, Josie. Okay, this is what we've talked about both in the workshop and at the beginning of the meeting when we approved the agenda, so I believe we are looking for an amendment to replace this resolution.
Mayor Osterbeck, this is Chris.
Right, Chris.
Yes, I'll go ahead and I'd like to move to amend the current resolution 2243 that we have in our packet to be substituted with the resolution 2243, the revised version. And the only correction was that there was a dollar amount put in there, and the old version didn't have that. So the revised version has that, and that's what I'd like to amend this to bring to talk about and to vote on.
Thanks, Chris. Second to the amendment.
This is Brenda, second.
Thank you, Brenda. Okay, so before us we have the amended resolution 2243. Annie?
Yes, Mayor, back in assembly. So resolution 2243 authorizes the mayor to engage Esplin and Associates LLC for accounting assistance support in an amount not to exceed $100,000. The borough and Esplin and Associates have been working together on the FY21 audit prep, the financial software request for proposal, addressing prior audit findings, and establishing financial policies and procedures. Esplin and Associates has provided the attached engagement letter, which outlines the engagement objectives and scope of work for FY23, which includes Esplin and Associates providing accounting assistance and support for FY22 financial statement and audit preparation, for providing accounting assistance and support for the accounting software transition to Excel, providing ongoing accounting assistance and support to the borough as requested, directed by the borough administrator and/or the finance director. engagement letter also outlines the CPA firm's responsibilities, the borough's responsibilities, and the professional service fees. The agreement will be in an amount not to exceed $100,000. Esplin and Associates is familiar with the borough's finances, and having a CPA firm that can assist in audit prep, addressing audit findings, and providing ongoing accounting assistance and support is critical to borough operations. Administration recommends signing an engagement letter with Esplin and Associates for July 1, 2022 through June 30th, 2023 in an amount not to exceed $100,000. And this would be funded appropriated annually through the budget cycle under the finance department, which was shown in the budget. So with that, if there's any questions, please let me know. Thank you.
Paul?
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'm not going to support this resolution. And one of the reasons is the same reason we talked about during the school board meeting, that we're moving jobs outside of the region. And this is a big increase, too. But I'm just online looking at this company. You got a nice website, but there's 5 employees. But it looks like it's based in Seward. But I think I would support to have a local finance director in our region, the market rate or whatever would be fair to have one live here would be much preferable to the way we're doing it this way. And so for that reason and other reasons, I'm going to vote no on this. Thank you.
Mayor Osterbeck, this is Annie. Can I respond to that, please?
Go ahead.
Okay. So we are planning on hiring a finance director come the next fiscal year, and that's included in the budget underneath the salaries. This is for a contract accountant that has specialties that is currently assisting us with our audit. We've had them in the past. They were not from the region to assist us, that specializes in this, and it is really critical right now. We have a bunch of audit findings that we're trying to address, that she's helping us address those. She's assisting the finance department with making sure that the journal entry policies and procedures are being followed, as well as bank reconciliation policies, and assisting us through that. So we are in compliance with GASB requirements and our audit. So this is different than hiring a full-time personnel, which we are working on, but with the budget and everything going on, it's been a lot, so just haven't been able to get to that yet. So our plan is to go out in the new fiscal year to hire a new finance director. So this is separate. So I just wanted to clarify the difference. I truly think this is critical to borough operations. Right now, we have the acting finance director and myself that are trying to balance everything. So this third person is necessary. Thank you.
You know, and to add to that, last year, this person was supposed to go out to King Cole and work with the finance office. And, of course, COVID kind of screwed everything up for quite a while now. But anyway, so things are starting to get back on track. And especially with the changeover to the new system, I think it's something that we need to do. And this is not somebody that's going to be a person that's on the payroll as part of the staff. This is a contract person. So, anyway, other comments or questions? Hearing none. Question on the motion?
Josie?
Yes.
Josie? Warren?
Yes.
Brenda?
Yes.
Paul?
No.
Chris?
Yes.
Haley?
Yes, and last time you completely faded out, so I didn't.
Samantha?
Yes.
thank you. We don't have any new business before us. New business, we have three items. First one is donation requests.
I missed last 30 seconds of what you said.
Oh, I never speak for 30 seconds. we're down to donation requests.
Okay, thank you. So before you is the donation request. The borough has an established donation policy that allows entities within the borough communities to request charitable donations. Requests for donations must be completed and submitted by May 1st and November 1st of every year. In FY22, the Assembly appropriated $23,500 for donations. In May 2021, the Assembly approved $14,000 in FY22 donation requests, which left a balance of $9,500 for additional donations. The borough did not receive any donations in November 2021, I did receive four requests in May 2022 that qualify for the FY 2022 donation funds. Our administration recommends funding the following: Sandpoint Teen Center in the amount of $2,000, City of Sandpoint Community Cleanup in the amount of $1,500, the QTT Earth Day Fair in the amount of $300, and the King Cove Fire and Rescue Annual Fireman's Picnic in the amount of $3,000. That totals $6,800, which leaves a remaining balance of $2,700 in FY22. The borough also received, the recommendation for the FY23 budget donation line item is also $23,500. That will be introduced, which was just introduced and will be presented for public hearing at the following meeting. Budget approval will dictate whether the FY23 donations approved by the Assembly occur. By May 1st, 2022, the borough received three donation requests that qualify for FY23 funding. These requests are for expenses and activities that will occur during the FY23 fiscal year. The borough administration recommends funding the following: QTT Culture Camp in the amount of $7,000, Sandpoint Salmon Derby in the amount of $750, and the Pink Rain Champagne in the amount of $2,000, which totals $9,750. And would leave a remaining balance of $13,750 for remaining FY23 donations. So with that, if there's any questions, please let me know. Thank you.
Questions for Andy? So, Andy, are you looking for a motion?
Yes, we'll need a motion to approve.
Approve, Warren.
Second, Brenda.
Thank you, Brenda. Any comments or questions? Okay. If there's no money, so all questions.
Please.
Yes.
Paul.
Yes.
Brenda.
Yes, ma'am.
Warren?
Yes.
Josie?
Yes.
Samantha?
Yes. Yes.
Okay, thank you. I have a question for Chris. So your fireman's barbecue, when is that normally?
That's kind of a good question. We used to have it Memorial Day weekend, but we have a wedding going on. So we're looking at probably in July, maybe during that week closure that they have in July. So.
Okay. Could you keep us informed on when it is?
Yeah, I'll let you know exactly when we have it planned. We've got AC's donating 150-pound pig to be roasted too. So, I'll let you know as soon as we come up with a date.
Okay, appreciate it. Okay, next item on the agenda is a request by Assembly Member Gretel, manager form of government discussion. So, Paul, I'll turn it over to you.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I submitted this a couple weeks ago to ask for it to be put on the agenda. And I also forwarded, I think, about five attachments. Of course, none of those got included. And it's short notice. I don't expect at this meeting the Assembly to, they don't have any information before them, so I don't expect them to really discuss it because I spent quite a bit of time reading some information and what the option the Assembly could discuss and what the future may look like after, particularly I'm not going to be here forever and other people aren't either. And the big question that this agenda item would ask is the borough set up the way everybody would like to and is there improvements that could be made? And the attachments that were going to be included, one is that Title 29 that authorizes this action. And what it does, it would authorize the Assembly to make a motion to start the process. And if that passes, they also need a state law pass either an ordinance or resolution to have a vote for the citizens. The citizens actually make the motion. But then I also included, there's some borough assembly members who are part of other municipalities. So I included a comparable ordinance to how our administration is set up compared to King Cove and Sandpoint. But King Cove isn't, I've just got that on my phone. But I think all assembly members would benefit from looking and comparing and see what they think about a form of government that suits the future of the borough. And so what I just would hope to do at this meeting is just make a motion to include it on our regular meeting with all the attachments in July, the middle of July, and that's what I think would be a good, healthy discussion about the options, and it would give time for the assembly members in all the regions, in Acatan, in Cove Sandpoint, and look at their ordinances and look at the borough code and say, oh, yeah, I like this, I don't like that. And there's a, I personally do like the way Sandpoint and King Cove are set up. I think it's better than we're doing on how the function of government works. And that's the short version, Mr. Mayor. But I don't know. I would like to make a motion to schedule discussion on this. And,
well, let's have a little more discussion.
Sure, whatever you...
So, I have a question. So, the borough has been here since 1987. I have never heard anybody question the type of government we have, and I was there back in 87 when this was formed, and there was a lot of thought and discussion on it, on how it got set up. So, it got set up as a strong mayor form of government, and City Sandpoint has a strong mayor form of government. Here's your manager right there. So, anyway, after 34, 35 years down the road, and I know you've ran for the mayor of the borough numerous times, so you must have liked the type of system it was. So, at this point, why are you asking the assembly to change the form of government? Because it is a huge change, it's a big decision. Is there something that's going on in the current government that you don't like, that you want to change?
I'm just introducing this to look out for the future. I've been around a while like you have, and sometimes the time is right for people to look, and I think the time is right for people to make their own judgment, and they can read, and you know, maybe they'll like it, maybe they won't. But if they're part of this other government, and by the way, if you look at ordinances in communities like Sandpoint, King Cove, the devil's in the detail. If you look at Sandpoint,
by ordinance, the council takes care of the finance officer, the clerk. They do a lot of things. It's basically the administration does everything. And King Cove is very similar to South Point if you look at the actual ordinance and read them and compare them. And I think a lot of people don't probably look at that every day or hardly ever. And I didn't spend much time in the past looking at exactly what the code says, because the devil's in the detail and all these things. And if you do look, you'll say, oh, I didn't know that. That's what happened to me. And so that's the main reason that I'm trying to keep the discussion short at the meetings.
Well, yeah, but anyway. It's not a short item. I mean, that's why I wanted to do it also during the over-the-air thing, because people need to know if you're looking at making changes and why you're making changes. But, you know, if you go to assembly manager form of government, that also takes the mayor. The mayor becomes more of a figurehead. The assembly and the manager work together. But the manager will have the authority over hiring and firing. It doesn't even go to the assembly under that form of government. The current one is if the mayor suggests to hire someone, it goes to the assembly for approval. So in that case, you would have more interaction with it, but once you go to an assembly manager form of government, you don't have, the only thing you have say over is hiring and firing of the manager. So if you don't like what the manager is doing, you remove them. So one of the things that happens in a manager form of government, because you give them this added responsibility, is the salary range goes up quite a bit for a manager in a manager form of government. Also, managers don't normally last very long in a manager form of government. Some of the communities have gone through 3 or 4 managers in a 5-year period, so then they have to add a line into their budget, basically for severance pay, because they wind up buying up the contract for 6 months of what their annual salary is. So, you know, to me, unless there's a burning issue with the current administration or the way it's operated, I seriously can't see doing this. I can't even see the assembly wanting to do this, because the assembly now becomes the controller of the borough, so you have to have a daily back and forth with your manager. And by the way, if you go to this form of government, I think you have to go out for an RFP for a manager, so your administrator by default, but you have a job and have to reapply for this. Of course, you could pick somebody else for that manager position. So as you go down that road, it's going to cause a lot of changes in ordinances and what have you. And unless there's something out there that caused this for you to bring this forward, I wouldn't recommend voting for it, because I think you have a very good system. Current system that you have is very transparent. The administrator or the mayor makes tough decisions. We bring everything to the assembly. The assembly makes the decisions. So I don't know how you get much better than that. And then asking the residents of the borough, say, hey, we need a change, just because maybe it's time for a change. I don't really feel that's a proper way to do things. And system that we have has worked fine. We're probably in better shape than a lot of boroughs and cities our size in the state, as far as being fluid and above board with not only with our assembly and the people in the communities, but having the ability to fund a lot of the projects and stuff that we have because of past mayors and assemblies forming, like, just, I mean, our main thing that we've done over here. Thank God was built a permanent fund. And that all came from the type of structure that we have today. So I don't know how many assembly members out there have the time to deal with the day-to-day business of the borough. There's a lot of moving pieces in this borough. And I would find it kind of hard for, well, it wouldn't be an administrator, it would be a manager, to conduct business. If you did this, would you have, like, say this got passed through the
people in the borough that decided, yes, we want to go this way. Have you thought about how would the assembly work? Would they have a chairman or something to work on a day-to-day basis with their manager? Because she won't, she or he, they wouldn't have time to contact every assembly member to make sure they're on the right path, because that manager then is totally accountable to the sitting assembly. Assembly has
the right to hire and fire at will. So, what do you think? Yeah, thank you, Mr. Mayor. I appreciate your comments. However, if you read through it, I think you were in error on several of them. But my only objective is to let the assembly members look at these and read them, and it doesn't take very long, and make their own mind up. Now, if you don't want them to look at it and kind of look at the difference, that's fine, too. But I think it would be kind of eye-opening, would eye-opening for me to really compare King Cole, for instance, and look at Sandpoint's exact wording and the Borough's code, too. Thank you.
Okay. I know basically Sandpoint's is the same.
Alvin, this is Brenda.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yes, I totally object to that. I wouldn't vote for anything like that, and I wouldn't support any type of resolution like that for us to even look at something like that. I look at the success of the past years of this organization and the structure we have to mess with that and to say that's not working when we've got the successes we've had in all of our communities due to the borough. I think I'll leave it at that, because I think I might say some other stuff that I might not sound too good, but know that I would not even support even reading any of that. I'm sorry.
Okay. Thank you. Any other comments?
This is Chris, Mr. Mayor.
Go ahead, Chris.
Yeah, I don't agree with changing what we've got going right now. It's good. You know, that's what we got the mayor and the city manager for. You know, I think things are going just fine, and we wanted to become more transparent, and I think we are doing that now, and we're getting things done now too with the strategic planning. So I won't be supporting any changes. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you, Chris. Other comments?
Thanks. Chris, if you would look at your King Cove ordinances and see how they're set up, you may think, maybe you don't like the King Cove ordinance, but I think you might say, yeah, that's pretty good. You know, if you actually look at it, I think you'd be beneficial. But I can understand where people might not like to change things. That's fine. But it isn't going away, these kind of questions. It comes down to what kind of a democracy you're comfortable with, I guess. Thank you.
I understand where you're coming from, Paul, but you got to look at a city's, their ordinances for the way they manage is citywide. A borough, you've got how many communities within that borough that you're governing, so you have to take that into consideration, too, and I think the borough is doing a good job with that. So.
Okay. Other comments?
Yeah, this is Josie.
Right. Go ahead, Josie.
I don't see changing anything, but reviewing the ordinances just to review them, I think, would be a good idea. Just, you know, for review. You said they were, you know, 30 plus years, and I don't think a review would hurt.
Okay.
Mr. Mayor, no, I don't see a point. Not all the assembly members are here, but it's nice to have a full body when you make big decisions. If you think it's a big decision, that's fine. But I would, I have forwarded to the city clerk this information. I think if she just forwards the information, I don't think it takes a motion to do that. But I'm talking about in public, so I don't have to call people and have some kind of an illegal meeting or anything. But I think if one page of Title 29, there's one sheet of how the borough administration set up, two sheets how the city Sandpoint's administration set up, and I think it's two pages of City of King Cove, and I think everybody that's had a chance to read it, they might want to talk about it again. That's all. And I think I've already forwarded the information to the clerk.
Do you want to make a motion to do something with
this? Well, I would make a motion to forward the information about the municipalities in our region, boroughs, Sandpoint, King Cove, Cold Bay as a city, and Akatan, and Falls Pass. Just a quick comparison, and it would take 10 minutes to read them all. I think that would be beneficial if other members would just like to look at it. They don't have to take any action.
Yeah, because they may just be happy with what they have. But anyway, so Paul got a motion to forward all his information to all of the assemblies. So can you get a second?
I'll second that, Mr. Josie.
Okay, Josie. Any comments? Question on the motion.
Brenda?
No.
Paul?
Yes.
Chris?
No.
Josie?
Yes.
Warren?
No.
So, motion fails. Okay, onward. Paul also put this on their discussion on Trident's possible move to Captain's Bay, and this just came out, I think, this morning, so that was forwarded to Beach Assembly. So, Paul, you want to start off?
Yeah, the article was posted in Undercurrent News. I think Tom Seaman was the author. I'm not sure who he worked for, but he had the byline. He gave a few details about Trident's proposed plan to move from Akatan to Captain's Bay, up to head of Captain's Bay on that property they just leased, and apparently building a dock right now this summer, and they're finalizing, at least it said they're finalizing, it was quoted, that they're finalizing the plan to have a more automated plant built in Dutch Harbor, and that would, of course, probably force Akatan to close. And if we get $1.5 billion in tax, I'm not sure what we get out of, for instance, the pollock fishery, which is a huge fishery. If a year for 20 years, we're talking big money. For the borough. The borough is going to have to, it's going to be a different borough if we don't respond to this or figure out what we want to do. And, you know, there's things like the bonding of projects. I don't know. That's why I asked earlier in the workshop about the harbor and the airport, if we're paying for that. And meanwhile, there's reduced population to use these facilities. That's going to affect us as well as the American Fisheries Act when they allocated pollock to all these shoreside processors and some floating processors. Does a processor have the ability to move to a completely different town outside of the political jurisdiction? We need to have answers, I think, probably to some of those. And Trident's been a good company. Of course, they're not going to buy bottom fish here in Sandpoint and whitefish. They're going to buy halibut and blackfish, but not caught in pollock now, so that affects us also. Anyway, there's some big questions that we, you know, it's just, oh, but, yes.
One little correction. They're not going to process it here, they're going to buy it here.
Well, yeah, they have in the past, over the dock, they bought it here.
Right,
yeah, but there's no employees here.
No.
Yeah,
no,
so
no,
it's, And they could decide not to go over the dock any time they wanted to.
Oh, sure.
They're doing that as a courtesy now, which is great. That's very good of them.
In your discussion, that is something we would also want to talk to them about to make sure that the city gets protected by it.
Anyway, everybody I talked to raised big alarm bells today when it was put overnight on the Undercurrent News, and I don't, we're not scheduled to take any official action, but we've got to be on top of it because, once they start building something, it could be locked in and we're not going to be able to change it.
Well, since this just came out today, we're getting ready for Vic's meeting today.
It's nobody's fault that we're not ready to do anything because nobody knew about it. So, but they do now. That's why we're having a meeting. That's why I thought it was important to bring it up so everybody that, listen, most people have already heard it, but some people probably haven't heard it. I've talked to people in Seattle that involved with Trident and they didn't know about it.
No, it's a new thing. And it doesn't really stay in there 100% that they're going to do that. They're looking at totally building a new plant next down the building you want in Dutch Harbor. So I think maybe there's some wiggle room to talk to. But anyway, we'll get down to that. But Annie, do you have any comments on this?
Yeah, just a few. So we will be having conversations with Trident, also with the city of Accutane. We will have to look at how this will impact the borough. We're not quite sure yet, and how it will impact the city as well, because it's going to have a huge, huge impact on them if this actually happens for them to move to Unalaska. So we're looking into it. Your bond questions, all that stuff is stuff that we're going to have to look into, and how much bond debt we have and all the other payments we have to make, and we're going to have to make some pretty big decisions if they do decide to leave in the next 3 to 5 years. I would anticipate it taking that long.
And I think all in answer to part of your concern was, we're in the mix right now for breakwater on that coon, which is super expensive, not even including whatever type of dock structure we put inside of it for moving the passengers back and forth. And that's something I had already asked Annie about this morning. I said, hey, we've got this huge project that's going to take quite a few years to get it built. Say they did move out of Accutane, I just don't see where there would be any funding to complete it. Plus, if that amount of people in that industry moved out of there, I probably shouldn't say anything, but my first thought is, why would the Corps continue the project? Because the breakwater is a Corps project. So those are other things that Annie and I also need to talk about along with everything else. So it's a big lift trying to figure out exactly what all of this is going to be. And it's going to impact not just the borough, but it's going to impact every community in the borough because extra funding that we get. I mean, there's nothing in ordinance that we have to give X number of dollars to each community, but over the years it's developed, and we do try and give funds to each community to help them keep developing and building their infrastructure. So all this has to be looked at, and that's probably going to be one of our main focuses once we can get through the budget process and some of the other things that we're doing. We also have to figure out, we got to get a finance director on board. And I think so. There's a lot of things out there to do, but this is going to be a priority also to try and figure out where this is going and make sure that we get information back to the assembly in a timely manner and get the. Other comments? Hello? All right. So this will be an ongoing discussion item. So we're down to reports and updates. So, Annie.
Mr. Mayor, after back in assembly, my report's in the packet, but just a few updates. We did issue a Coal Bay Dock reconnaissance feasibility study. We received two proposals by the deadline. We're in the process of reviewing those now and hope to have a resolution ready to go for the May 26th meeting for approval. So that's exciting. We're just not ready quite yet. There is an update on the King Cove Road update. As you know, the Secretary of Interior Holland did visit King Cove on April 20th. It was a great event. Hats off to the city, and particularly Gary Hennig for planning that. That was a heavy lift, and it went really well. So that there's an update on there and there. The Ninth Circuit Appeal, there's been quite a bit of action on this. The opponents did file an en banc reconsideration. Please don't ask me exactly what that is, but they did issue an appeal for that. And also there were three University of Colorado law professors that filed an amici curiae brief, and then Jimmy Carter's attorney also has submitted one as well. So there's quite a bit of activity there. I'll have more updates at the July meeting, but there's been quite a bit of activity in relation to that. As far as the special use permit, really not much has occurred there, and the state's still considering the appropriate next steps for that. Sandpoint Harbor Floats, we will be submitting a grant for the Sandpoint Harbor Dock Project through the PID program tomorrow. I'm planning on getting that off tomorrow, so that's exciting. We're asking for about $9 million. For that project. Financial software, also we're currently in negotiations, as I mentioned, with Cassell. I hope to have that contract finalized, and then I'll have a timeline and more to share with the Assembly shortly. My biggest accomplishment over the last month was the budget. Thank you for doing the 4% COLA increase for everyone and the staff. That's greatly appreciated. But that has really taken up the majority of my time over the last few weeks. So other than that, if there's any questions, please let me know. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions?
Mayor, I'm about to stay in subject. You guys are kind of going in and out. That's why I haven't. Annie, what did Annie say the 9 million was for?
Sandpoint Harbor Float request for putting into the federal government.
Okay, got it. Thank you.
Yep, you're welcome.
Okay. Other questions? Okay. Oh,
yeah. Good. Is it on?
Good afternoon, Mayor and Assembly. This is Talia. My report is in the packet. I'm going to start off with the meetings I attended, which I have listed above. The main one I will focus on is the CIP workshop application training, which I attended today. Part of our strategic planning is to increase our score for the deed application from a conceptual design to a schemic design. So we're really trying to get about 10 to 15 points higher. So that is something that I've been actively working on, getting the training and figuring out how to apply. And, yes, of course, to improve our score. Next is the ISO tank inspections. On May 4th, we got the inspection from Applied Technical Services for the ISO tank inspection. The inspection has been submitted to Madison for their records. Luckily, we don't have to do this for another 5 years. I want to thank AMO for helping out with that. And this was, again, a lot of moving pieces between Applied Technical, Madison, and Trident. So a big job and happy that it's finally completed and everything is good to go. Next is the Accutan truck surplus advertisement sale. This is stemming from Resolution 2230. The Borough Assembly found and declared that the Accutan truck is no longer needed by the borough. The borough is authorized and directed to conduct a surplus auction by sealed bid for the purpose of selling the surplus property. Thus far, I have received one sealed bid. I will continue to keep everyone in contact as things progress. but the date of sale is for May 25th. Any questions can be directed to me to view the vehicle. You can contact AMIL. Beasley Bridge Solutions, all the trainings are officially done. So, again, thank you, everyone, for getting them done. Hooray. It's a 10, all set. And, yes, as we move along, just continue to be watchful of the emails that we receive. There is a lot of scamming, a lot of just negative things coming in through the Internet. So watch out for people who try to send you links asking you to buy gift cards or impersonating one of us. It's pretty bad. And last is the meal tracking form. I am actually very open to any discussion, any thoughts that people might have. We have not received any new applications or forms since February. Not sure what else that we can do, but just letting the information be known, putting it out in the ether, continue to spread the word. And with that, that's all that I have. Thank you.
Thank you, Talia. You know, and we brought up this form that you developed to Swampsy and different places. We've talked about it a lot. It doesn't seem to be gaining any momentum at all. There's no new applications or requests coming into you. So maybe it's time just to put this thing to bed for a while, and that'll free you up to do other things. So unless there's some reason the assembly feels that we need to keep going on it, I think it just knowing that it was out there, I think helped. Quite a bit. At least that's my thought. But anyway, unless somebody objects to it, I wouldn't spend any more time on it for now. Anyway, questions or comments for Talia?
Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you. Laura.
Now you're on.
Oh, sorry, I thought I was on a second ago. So thank you, Mayor, Ostrak and Assembly. It's been a very busy month. I know Annie already mentioned about the Interior Secretary's visit, so I won't go into too much detail about that, other than I provided a lot of links in my report in case anyone's interested, having to do with the visit as well as the Ninth Circuit's decision and she mentioned the en banc, the petition for rehearing. That conservation groups filed, and then following that, the amicus brief, which she also mentioned. Those are all received quite a bit of media attention, so stay tuned. I'm sure there will be more to come on this issue. On another topic, the website design of Beverly, Glenor and I have had a couple of training sessions for the new website, and a couple of us have sort of added and deleted things on the new website, so we're sort of playing with that. So that should go up and be live by the end of this month. And then the other one will go away, so this will go in its place. On another thing I've been working for is the RFP for a photographer, videographer. We posted an RFP for this on April 15th, and we've had some interest from several different photographers. I'm not sure about how many, but the deadline for this is coming up May 16th, so we'll have more information then. And then at that time, we'll then form a committee of staff members to evaluate and score the photographers, videographers, based on their qualifications and their previous work. So more information will be forthcoming on that. As far as the Borough Facebook page, I just wanted to let folks know that our previous Borough Facebook page had some problems recently towards the end of March, and we got locked out of it. We tried very hard to contact Facebook and get some sort of help and let them know what was going on. We really didn't get any sort of satisfactory answer, so we had some of our IT folks help with that. They basically said that I sort of did the same steps that they did, and so we finally had to sort of just give up on that and start a new page. So there is a link for that for those of you who are on Facebook and are interested in following. There's also a link in the class to In the Loops, so you can look for it there as well if you're interested. And speaking of In the Loop, I sent out two issues recently. in early May. That contained a recap about the Interior Secretary's visit for those of you who were not there and wanted to read about it. Contained testimony from residents, Mayor Osterbach, King Cove Mayor, Warren Wilson, et cetera. And the other issue that was sent out was last night. It was an obituary on William R. Eubank, he's also known as Bill in the community. He was a well-known educator at Sandpoint and throughout the region. He passed away on May 5th in Beijing. And he also served on the Sandpoint School Board and was a member of the Alaska State Board of Education for a number of years and was an owner and manager of several apartment complexes in Sandpoint, as well as a grocery store and a service station. So we included that, and there's information on that and on his accomplishments. So those are some of the highlights. If you have any questions or comments, please let me know. Thank you.
Thank you, Laura. Any questions for Laura? And I appreciate you all putting that in there on Bill Eubanks. A lot of people appreciated that, so thank you.
Thank you for passing that on.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Ernie Weiss, Director of Natural Resources. To briefly summarize my report, start off with Board of Fisheries. Most of you know that there were two emergency petitions to the board last month. Per board policy, the board delegates responsibility to respond to the commissioner. He did respond on Tuesday, and he denied the petitions. One was to limit chum harvest in the South Pen to 280,000 fish, and the other one was to limit all fishing time in the South Peninsula to 100 hours only. So the board could still, two members or more could call a special meeting. We're hoping that the commissioner's response will stand. An aside, we have put out an invitation to board members, the five that are still on the board that will be returning. As soon as the other two are seated, we'll get invitations to them to visit the borough. We've had responses from a couple. So hopefully we'll get some Board of Fish members out this summer. All of the Board of Fish new members were confirmed by the legislature, and the executive director, Glenn Height, has moved over to the CFEC. North Pacific Fishery Management Council, next month in Sitka, also virtually. I'll be attending virtually. Charlotte will be there in Sitka. Big items, the Trawl EM that Charlotte's quite involved with, and the salmon genetics paper, which will be interesting to see. Those won't be published until the 20th of this month, but tomorrow, the small boat Bering Sea cod paper will be out on the, should be anyway, if it's following the schedule. There was a great webinar that I've posted. There's a link to the, it was recorded, and the Bristol Bay Sockeye Run forecast and timing, experts from the University of Washington. So that's there. I've got a couple of notes. Department of Commerce has a new policy addressing the climate crisis. Department administrative order that establishes policy to integrate climate considerations into all department programs. It also establishes a Commerce Climate Council. And then NOAA Fisheries has a new draft policy, equity and environmental justice strategy. There's an article on that. We'll probably make comments on that, which are due by August 19th. Got links to the North Peninsula and the South Peninsula management plans. Alaska Marine Highway will be running each month once, except for June, no ferry in June. Yesterday, Charlotte and I both attended parts of the ADF&G listening session because there's more fishery disaster money that has just been allocated, and they were a listening session on the spend plan. If you want to submit comments, you can do that, I think, by the end of this month. I can't remember, but there's a, I'll just say the web email address, dfg.com.fisheriesdisasters@alaska.gov, if you have some input on how to spend the money on the fisheries disaster. I think you can find information on my Facebook. Otherwise, Monday, Copper River opens, and redistricting decision. The next one will be on Monday. And that's about all I have. Thank you, Mr. Mayor, Assembly.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ernie. Lots of information. Questions for Ernie?
Ernie, I didn't catch if you were going to be in Sitka, and if you were, what days were you going to be there?
Thanks, Paul. I will not be attending. Charlotte will be there. I will be attending virtually, and possibly you can testify virtually to the AP, the SSC, and the council. But no, I'm not going to go there. Charlotte, I don't know the day she'll be there. Thanks.
One other quick question. The commissioner of your public letter wrote a comment to the Board of Fish, you know, kind of saying there is not an emergency reason to have an emergency on a chum salmon. But what exactly is the Board of Fish required? Do they have to respond to his letter, or what's the next step for the Board of Fish besides just they can have a meeting as long as two people call one? Is there anything in writing that they have to do? What they have to do?
No, they've delegated in a board policy that responsibility to the commissioner. They can override it. It will take a couple of them to call a meeting to do that, but they don't have to do anything, and I don't think there's any time. There might be a 30-day time limit. I'm not sure on that, but they don't have to do anything. Hopefully it'll just stand as is where you deny the petitions. Thanks.
Other questions? Okay, thank you, Ernie. And Charlotte, with your little tag standing on the beach.
Thank you, Mayor Osterbach and Assembly. I have my report before you. I'll start with electronic monitoring. So I don't know if you guys, it's been a long drawn out project. I'm now on Western Gulf 3, so this is the third sort of phase of this project in the EFP. So I just wrapped up the final programmatic and financial reports for Western Gulf 2 as the second phase of the project. It was a major success. It was kind of the first big project that we had under the EFP. So the EFP started in 2020 and went through, well, is still going right now, but it was kind of the first 2 years. So obviously we were able to successfully demonstrate that EM can be used on tenders, which was a huge question and still is at the council. And we were able to show them that this works on tenders, and we were able to leverage EM to fully implement a data portal for hotspot mapping and e-log, which is now actually sort of being lauded as a real big success that they'd like to see used in other fisheries, because our counterparts are still using paper logbooks, but we have transitioned to e-log. We did have a saltwater technician go out to King Cove to install some new systems on the FC Scotch Cap and also to do some updates on the Cape St. Elias. So that's kind of in preparation for this fixed gear project that I'd like to start working on. NIFWIF has still not provided me a grant agreement for this project because of their understaffing, but I did just hear from them yesterday that it is in the final stages and will be sent over for signature soon. We did have the vessel start collecting some preliminary EM video during the stablefish pot fishery, and that has helped NIMS start to develop a sampling design for that project. So even though I don't have money yet, we're still trying to get some of the work done and be prepared for when we do get funded. I will be attending the Trawl EM committee meeting. I'm a committee member on May 31st in Anchorage as I'm participating in the development of the Trawl EM analysis. As Ernie said, that will be on the June council agenda, so I will be in Sitka in person the 7th through the 11th. Those are kind of my core days. I need to be there, as this agenda item will be on all three SSC, AP, and council agendas. I'm also developing the final NIFWIF proposal for Western Gulf 4, so this is hopefully going to be the final funding request for this project, and that will be it. Hopefully by 2024, we'll be in regulatory implementation, and that'll be it for this project, so that's exciting. So that'll just get us through the rest of next year, or 24, excuse me. As for mariculture, this is very quickly coming back on my radar. I don't have a ton to talk to you yet about. I did attach the programmatic report for NIFWIF, the final report. So you're welcome to look at it. There's a lot of information in there. I just would like to have a really nice outreach product to give to the Assembly before I talk about that project and what comes next. But we do plan on picking up on the Alaska Sea Grant project this year to construct the first farm in Sandpoint. Excuse me. As far as the cod tagging project, I did talk about that a lot earlier, but we did successfully complete the second round of cod tagging this past winter on the FB decision. The charter lasted 9 days from May 9 through the 17th. We are in May right now. and we spanned from Sanac all the way to Kupreanof and released tags at 8 different sites, 4 inshore, 4 offshore. We deployed 27 satellite tags, 39 low-tech tags, which are another computer-based tag, 760 conventional tags, and in addition, we collected 186 biological samples, which includes otoliths for age, length, weight, maturity, and genetics. And for kind of something, a side project that I'm working on the stock assessment author with, I did do 7 stereo camera deployments targeting spawning aggregations to kind of look at spawning behavior, which nobody knows anything about. Really exciting. We were able to actually track down and recover a physical 365-day tag that washed ashore in Chichagof Bay or Chicago Bay, which is kind of a gold mine. We asked permission to do this like a month and a half ago, and we thought we missed our window, but we had a little bit of extra time, and we were over that way. So we popped into the bay, and one of the crew members actually found this 4-inch-long tag on a stretch of beach in the middle of the ocean. So that was pretty cool, and it's a gold mine for data. It gives us so much information that does not come through the satellites when they pop up, so that's super cool. Also, we finalized the Kingfisher Marine Research Contract. I've attached that for you, and I'm working with AFSC and UAF on that cooperative research proposal to finish this work and to start incorporating it into stock assessment and management. I did attach the RFP for you. I didn't have a pre-proposal quite ready by the time I submitted this report, but as it stands right now, the budget looks to be at about $2.2 million, which we imagine will get pared down quite a bit, so something under that. I also included just some fun pictures for you. I just thought I'd show you that top picture is just me surgically inserting a low-tech tag. Those go inside the body cavity, and then we put an orange tag and then dorsal of the fish so people can identify the tagged fish. There's a picture of one of our low-light cameras that we used. There is me holding the golden ticket satellite tag and then also just doing some more tagging work. So anyways, I'm happy to take any questions, and thanks.
Okay, thank you, Charlotte. I have one question on that last year's tagging adventure that you folks went out on. How many tags have been returned?
Yeah, so actually, so there's kind of 2 ways we look at it. Return tags are pretty low because those have to be physically recovered by someone like in a fishery. So those tags, we've only physically recovered 4 tags, which is actually pretty good considering we only deployed 25. But we have had all of the tags pop up at their designated time, besides, I think, 1, which we're still trying to figure out what happened with that tag. So at this point, we are done receiving all of those tags from the first year. We should start seeing tags from this year pop up in just a couple of months here, because I think we did some 90-day tags and 180-day tags. And then just for everybody's reference, each satellite tag costs $4,100, which is why sometimes those tag numbers look a little bit low, but they do provide a wealth of data. So we try to balance the sampling design with these sort of very high-value computer tags versus conventional tags. So hopefully we'll get this upcoming funding, and that will really bolster our data collection. So, thanks.
Okay. Yeah, just to make the tags, the ones the guys find too attractive. I remember back in the old days, king crab fishing, we used to, even they paid us a couple dollars for them, they made really good zipper pulls on our jackets, so a lot of times they didn't get turned in. So, anyway.
I'll remember that. Thank you.
Any questions for her? Okay. And, of course, the other report that's in there is Amos, but Amos on personal leave this week, so it's there for you to read. So, assembly comments.
Mayor, I'll come back to this, Chris.
Hey, Chris.
We need you guys to get something better over there. We can barely hear you guys. We can hear Anchorage good. We can hear Axtan and Cold Bay and Falls Pass, but something to do with Sand Point, I don't know.
How about Anchorage? Do you guys have trouble hearing us out here in Sand Point?
It's harder to hear you than the other communities.
Well, maybe we'll order a new system. No, it's been like this for a long time. It's been like on and off. I don't know what causes it.
Yeah, you're fading in and out from Cold Bay here. It's like you're...
If you're closer to the microphone, this must work pretty good.
Did you hear Paul?
Yeah, I heard him that time.
Oh. Yeah,
1, 2, 3, microphone 6 inches away. And a test. This is only a test.
We might look at replacing this because over the years there's been a lot of complaints, and we always thought it was, you know, maybe in the wiring or something coming into the building, but maybe it's time for us to replace this one. We'll look into it. Okay. Other assembly comments? No? Okay. Public comment. All right. Okay, well, I know it's been a long meeting, but these are very important ones, you know, the first reading of the budget, and then the 26th, when we go to the public hearing and finalize the budget. I hope everybody's there for that. And with that, our next meeting date will be May 26th. That'll be the budget meeting, second reading, public hearing. So with that, I'm looking for a motion to adjourn.
Chris, make a motion to adjourn.
Okay, thank you guys. You have a good evening.